The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, as I said before the meditation, it's really a pleasure to be here with you. And if you weren't here at the very beginning, maybe you aren't aware that Gil's teaching a retreat for 2 weeks, the next 2 weeks, and then he'll be away for the following week as well. So I'll be sitting in this week, and next week will be May Elliott, and we're not quite sure who the third week will be. And I also mentioned that I've participated in this 7 a.m. sit, you know, along with many hundreds of you, many hundreds of times over the last 4 years. It's amazing to me that it's been 4 years. And I'm really happy to be here in a different role this week, being the one who speaks. And I hope it will be useful to you. So, of course, there are a lot of different ways to approach Buddhist practice, Buddhist thought, Buddhist religion, if you think of it in that way. Some people treat Buddhism as a kind of an orthodoxy with things to believe in that can make us feel secure in a difficult world, something outside ourselves, you know, a support, but an external support, a belief system. And some people treat the path more often as a, did I turn off original sound? I hope I did. Yes, no, I didn't. Okay, that was something I forgot to do. excuse me if there has been an echo. There was something going on. So I said some people treat the Buddhist path as an orthodoxy, a support from outside ourselves, a belief system that makes us feel safe, perhaps, in this world. And some people treat the path more as a self-help program, you know, a toolkit that helps us to be more effective, more kind, happier in our lives. And some people focus for the most part on having pleasant and peaceful and deep meditations, using the practice perhaps as a respite from pain in their lives. And then some people engage with the Dharma as a lifelong path to freedom, a path to liberation from clinging to any kind of inclination in the mind, any movement in the mind towards greed, hatred, and delusion. And, you know, all of those ways of approaching the Dharma are legitimate. But of course, I'm here to advocate for seeing it as a path to freedom. It's the idea that it's possible to come to a complete sense of freedom of heart and mind in this lifetime. That's really inspiring to me. And whatever our motivation for practice, when we encounter Buddhist teachings, when we listen to talks, when we read ancient texts or modern books or magazine articles about Buddhism, we all relate in different ways to the teachings that we come in contact with. Some of us will take what we hear or read on faith, not questioning it at all. And some of us might trust the interpretation of one particular teacher, might have a favorite. And when that person presents the teachings, we really connect. And some of us might consider that what we hear or read, that it makes sense. We might just be looking at it more intellectually or intuitively. You know, oh, this makes sense to me. This fits. And some of us are kind of more skeptical, only accepting teachings that resonate with what we already believe about life. So the Buddha described three general ways that people connect with spiritual teachings. Some people the Buddha called traditionalists, those who base their beliefs on scripture or on oral tradition, those who pretty much take things on faith. And another group he called reasoners and investigators, who rely on logic, on analytical reasoning to make their assessments of what they're hearing, what they're reading. And the third group he called experientialists, those who base their belief on their own direct knowledge. That is, their approach is empirical. And the Buddha counted himself among this third group. What he understood and taught, he said, was based on his own experience, what he had come to know directly as a result of practice, not dependent on an external authority. And I think it's useful for us to be conscious of the ways that we personally tend to approach any system of knowledge, whether it's religious or political or social, just in general in our lives. Do we unconsciously hold views or attitudes that come from our families, from our culture, from what we learned in school? You know, which I'm sure that's true for many of us, for most of us, maybe for all of us. Do we take those things on faith, you know, or do we question them? Or are we more likely to look at ideas intellectually, just judging them to be well thought out, rational, aligned with reality? Or do we tend to try ideas out and see if they actually make a difference in our lives, leading to more of what we'd like to see in ourselves? I think recognizing the ways that we tend to develop views around any subject that we're interested in is really useful to look at. And we're probably using the same strategies to arrive at the way we relate to the Dharma. So it's good to be aware, you know, and maybe we're taking things on faith that could be investigated with more fruitful result. Maybe we're depending on our intellectual understanding without testing to see whether our beliefs are really congruent with our lived experience. We're encouraged in our Dharma practice to investigate to see if the Dharma teachings actually reflect our own experience. We're encouraged to do that. We inquire into the teachings we come in contact with, and as our mindfulness strengthens our sati, our awareness, as it strengthens, we're able to pay closer attention to our own experience than we probably ever have before in our lives. And we learn from that. When I make a claim about Dharma practice, I want to be really clear what I'm basing that claim on. For example, you know, I can tell you that as I was getting dressed this morning, I was kind of hurrying, and I can claim that if I'm really present to and mindful of the felt sense of hurrying in the body as I do it, that I'll see the stress in it, and I'll be able to let go of it. I'll be able to let it dissipate. So, you know, what am I basing that claim on? Did a teacher tell me that this is how practice works? You know, mindfulness can lead us to seeing stress that we might be ignoring, and then allows it to dissipate, to let go. Is it maybe something I just think makes sense? It does make sense, for sure. It makes sense to me. Hopefully, it's actually been my experience often enough that I can feel confident suggesting that, you know, that it works. And that's true. When I feel a need to hurry, I can sense the stress in it right away, and I can let that stress soften. I can ease up. I have empirical knowledge about that. So that's a really simple kind of example, of course. The Buddha considered himself an experientialist, one who bases belief on direct knowledge, not simply on faith or inference or reasonableness. So during the mornings this week, I want to talk about six qualities of the Dharma that are related to its empirical nature that can be experienced directly in our lives and in our practice. And I think the list will be familiar to many of you, maybe all of you, But I'm planning also to bring in a list of capacities that comes from a completely different area from the study of literacy. And my sense is that the capacities that I'll talk about can really support us in seeing and experiencing these qualities of the Dharma in our practice, in our lives. Maybe we could say that one way of looking at our practice is that we're developing more and more skillful literacy about the nature of our experience of life. We're learning to read our experience really deeply, to make sense of it, to understand it in deeper and deeper ways. I appreciate when I come across something from social science that kind of, really sheds light on Dharma teachings. So these six qualities of the Dharma, I'll go through them quite quickly, and we'll go through them during the week and the rest of the week. The Dharma, first, the Dharma is said to be well expounded, swakato, swakato. The implication is that the way the Buddha taught the Dharma was skillful. And what's often mentioned when referencing this statement is that the Dharma is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. It's useful all along the path. The second quality in this list is that the Dharma is visible here and now. Sanditiko. It can be examined right here in our own experience. It's not something that needs to be taken on faith. The third quality is that it's immediately effective, or timeless sometimes the translation, akaliko. We don't have to wait until we're dead or until our next lifetime if we subscribe to that, to rebirth, to experience it. It's always available. It's here in our experience, and we can see its workings in our minds and hearts as it happens. The fourth quality is this famous exhortation of the Buddha, ehi pasiko, come and see for yourself. So it's translated as inviting inspection. So again, this points to the Dharma not being taken simply on faith. So we can apply this ourselves. We can keep investigating. We can keep inspecting, keep looking all through the path, beginning, middle, and end. And the fifth quality is onward leading, fit for being used, relevant. And this is actually my favorite word in all the Dharma, opaneiko, onward leading. The practice of the Dharma leads one on towards freedom, towards awakening. And this aspect, it points to the fact that our practice unfolds over time. It naturally moves us in the direction of more freedom, of less clinging, less craving. There's a natural unfolding that takes place if we're practicing sincerely. We're gradually coming to understand what leads to more stress in our lives and what leads to more ease. Gradually inclining our minds more and more towards what's skillful, what's beneficial. And after a while, our minds and hearts, they just incline in that direction naturally, organically. The Dharma leads us on. The sixth quality is that the Dharma is to be experienced by the wise, or to be realized by the wise. Pachatam viditabo vinyuhi. It's up to us to walk the path ourselves. The goal of practice isn't given by grace. It's not given by good deeds or bestowed by some all-powerful God. An analogy that Gill often uses is only you can pee for yourself. We have to walk the path for ourselves. It's the only way that it can be realized. So all six of these point to the path's empirical quality. You know, there are different aspects of actually experiencing the Dharma playing out in our lives. And since there are six of them, you know, I'll talk about two of them tomorrow. So we cover them all in the 5 days. And I'll be trying to show how capacities that are useful for developing literacy about reading texts are really very, very helpful in becoming skilled at reading our own experience, so that the Dharma can fully unfold in our minds, in our hearts, in our lives. So tomorrow I'll begin with these first two qualities of the Dharma, that it is well proclaimed and visible here and now. And I'll introduce one of the competencies that supports seeing the qualities of the Dharma really expressed in our practice. And I look forward to being with you then tomorrow. So thank you very much for your attention this morning, and have a really lovely day or evening, whatever time it is for you.